Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you this morning. By my watch, it's time to start. We have a special guest today. If you haven't noticed, Diane's here with Richard. Of course, Richard is back, or she wouldn't be here either. So we're glad that they had a safe trip home. This morning, I'm going to take no more than 5 minutes and will not entertain any questions to what's going to be presented. I need to get into lesson 10, but there are three questions that were asked at the close of last week's class. There were actually four. We dealt with one of them during the class, and I'm going to deal with the other three now. And I'll be happy to study any of what I'm going to present with anybody, anytime. But I need to go through them hurriedly. These are questions that James Bell brought up. He and I had a discussion last Sunday. I told him that I would take care of it this morning. So I hope I do an adequate enough job. Question one. When Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper in Matthew 26, 27 through 29, he used one cup, a single container. When we take the Lord's Supper, are we commanded to use only one cup? Answer, no. Jesus was not instituting a container. The word cup is not referring to the container. The word is a common figure of speech known as metonymy, where the expression cup is used to reference the contents, not the container. Same wording you will find in Mark 14, Luke 22, and 1 Corinthians 11. Here's an illustration. When my wife makes baked chicken and I say to her, "What a great dish," am I referring to the serving dish or to its contents? I'm sure you get that logical illustration. Question two, are Christian women commanded to wear an artificial covering, a veil, in our worship assemblies? The reference is 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16. But we're not going to look at all those verses in the interest of time. Answer, in my opinion, no. Not all brethren agree, even in this congregation, though no woman here has chosen to do so. In the interest of peace and for conscience sake, I would not object if some did. It is obvious from the context that men are to have short hair and women long hair. The Greek term of distinction is katakalupto, which carries a primary meaning to hang down. Katakalupto is a compound word of kata, meaning down, and kalupto, meaning to cover up. A veil is an article of clothing. Verse 15 states, hair is a covering for a woman. Question number three, are we to honor all men as stated in 1 Peter 2:17? This came up because in our lesson 9, it was talking about brotherhood works. You will find that word brotherhood one time in the New Testament, and it's in that passage, and it looks like this. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the King, New American Standard. Answer, that is, show them respect, which is due to them according to their personal worth, to the rank or office which they sustain. That is, give honor to whom honor is due. Respect every man as a fellow creature. Romans 13, 7 through 8, which we have not gotten to yet in Don's Wednesday night class, but when we get it there, it reads this way, render to all what is due them. Tax to whom tax, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Verse 8, owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. I hope that addresses the questions. I repeat again, if you want to discuss any of this with me or the elders, just call us aside and we'll be glad to entertain it. Now we must go forward. Give me just 1 minute while I get this set up. Thank you.
right?
No, it's the wrong slide. It's this one here. I thought I could just minimize it and pull it right up, but it's not going to work. This will work. All right, on your page 42 in your book, this is lesson number 10, and it's a discussion of the extent of benevolence. Some of this we have, of course, gone through before, but not much of it. So by way of introduction this morning, when discussing benevolence, emotions are always involved. Some decisions have to be made about who needs help, how much should be given, how long should the help continue. Many of these issues become matters of judgment. It is an advantage to be in a local congregation with elders and deacons, scripturally chosen and appointed by the congregation to deal with such matters. Is benevolence a primary or secondary work of the church?
Secondary.
That's an interesting question, and Richard is correct. Is it a work of the church at all? Answer? Yes, it is. Number three, the church is a spiritual organization having a spiritual work to perform. Its purpose is to evangelize, meaning to preach and teach, to edify, meaning to strengthen, build up, and encourage others, to provide limited benevolence within a scriptural context. Not only is benevolence a work of the church, it is a commanded work of the church. On occasion, some of the saints in a local church may experience financial difficulties. Raise your hand if that's never happened to you. I didn't think I'd see any hand. Number three, they need some assistance. Sometimes a serious, immediate need is made known. Like, I've had some issues come up in my life. I can't pay my electric bill. They're going to shut the lights off Monday. Okay. What does the Bible teach about our obligations to help them? Now, look at the screen a minute. It's a commanded work of the church. Sometimes members get into financial difficulties. They need assistance. It's a serious, immediate need often. And then what does the Bible teach us about our obligations to help them? First, let's look at scriptural church benevolence. One who is lazy and will not work does not deserve help from anyone. Well, how do I know that? 2 Thessalonians 3:10 through 15. For even when we were with you, we commanded you to do this. If anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good. And if anyone does not obey our word in this epistle, note that person and do not keep company with him that he may be ashamed. Yet do not count him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. For those who will not work, God says what? Some may be guilty of poor stewardship of their personal financial resources and need help. Does the church have an obligation in this case? Look at the slide. Let that soak in. They haven't handled their money correctly, and they need financial assistance. Does the church, now we're talking about the local church here, under the banner of scriptural church benevolence. Does the church have an obligation in this case? John?
I would say no, with the idea that not to help them financially, but maybe to help them work out their finances. In other words, that I think that comes under the elders, that, you know, there has to be a, you know, the brethren should try and help them learn how to, you know, do their finances, or, you know, through the brother that needs help.
Yeah, like in the case of perhaps counseling.
Right, exactly.
Okay, Richard?
Usually there are some members in the congregation that handle finances well that are willing to counsel others that don't. That's right. Been my experience. There's always been volunteers to counsel people on financial affairs.
I know of a large congregation in the Houston area, 400 members. About 30 of them found themselves in this situation. One of the elders, astute in corporate finance and personal finance, held a class to try to get them to understand. Oh, well, that's like saying I'm hungry, but you're not going to eat. You're not going to feed them. No, it's not like that at all. It's bringing them together to help them help themselves. But I will tell you that some of them had pretty severe needs, and they were taken care of by those Christians down there. So does the church have an obligation in this case? What is an emergency situation? What if it is judged the church is not obligated? Can the church provide financial counseling? So those are some of the considerations. There are certain circumstances beyond a person's control. Major illnesses, weather, tornadoes, a car accident, a bad economy, no jobs available where I live. What is to be done then? John?
The no jobs available is an interesting one. We had people come up to us in Montana and say, you know, well, we need help. There's no jobs. Well, even if we had just mowed the lawn, we'd say, well, we could use the lawn mowed, or we could use the windows washed. There's always something that the brethren can give a person who's willing to work to do, rather than just, you know, handing out money.
That's right. But I think what this has to do with is permanent employment in a given area, okay? So the question is, what is to be done then? The Bible outlines a three-step process to deal with such situations. Family has the first obligation. The then individual Christians. In the case of needy Christians, the church. The primary responsibility of caring for people has been placed in the family. So we're going to look at each one of these. Notice Paul's instructions to Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. The duty of caring for one's own family is placed on the man of the house. Uh-oh, not so fast, Brother Allen. Have a lady here that doesn't have a husband. I have a lady here whose husband has passed away. I have a lady here who is never married, but has children and can help them. What is this saying to you right here? God's order of things is for the man of the house to take care of that. If that could not be done because it's not possible, then you have to consider other things. Kurt?
When you first came to this passage, it seemed to be a general application to all family members, but in the immediate context before and after that verse, it's talking about widows. Is that limited to widows or everybody in the house?
No, what we're dealing with right here is just this. We will get to widows, but just there. In fact, we covered widows rather extensively in the last lesson. Those duties, that is, caring for one's own family and the responsibility being on the man of the house, those duties extend beyond those living under his roof. Still talking about family here. Those of his household implies other family members not under his roof must also be cared for by him if he can do it. You've got to appreciate that little caveat there. Paul's instructions to Timothy in the first 16 verses of 1 Timothy 5 teaches that family must take care of their own. We went over this, we read those, all of those passages and discussed them. Only a special select group of women who met certain qualifications could be cared for by the church on a regular basis. Appreciate that word in blue, regular. They are referred to as widows indeed, and their earthly family had the first obligation for their care. Notice 1 Timothy 5:16. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, let her assist them, and let not the church be burdened, so that it may assist those who are widows indeed. So that is to a woman, a saint, that has a dependent widow in the family. She is to assist that widow and let not the church be burdened that it might assist women who have nobody to help them. Is that clear? We getting there? Okay. But those who were totally alone could be cared for by the church. When the local church receives a benevolent request from an individual, what are the initial questions that should be asked? Generally, this comes to the elders. John, hold your thought just a moment. What about your family? Have you talked with them? Will they help you? And if their family cannot or will not help, then what? Now I'm going to pause there. John, what was your question? I just wanted to get that slide. Okay, all right. The request would normally come to the elders. They would meet with that person privately, generally after service. What about your family? Are the elders out of line to ask that question?
No.
Have you talked with them? Again, same question. We out of line to do that? Will they help you? Those are logical questions to inquire when the church treasury may be called upon to support someone, even on an interim basis. Many times, it's been my experience that when a member of this local congregation needs financial help, I'll generally get a phone call. And then I'll say, I understand the situation. Let me discuss it with the elders. And we just text Don and Richard, let them know what the need is. They respond, and then I get back with the person if it comes to me. They also get requests, and they would do likewise. So, we have to be very sure that we're on safe ground here and we ask the right questions. The treasury of this local church is not an open door benevolent fund. There are limitations, John.
Now I have a question.
All right.
And it may come up later. I don't know if it does, and you can just tell me wait a while. But I'm curious, as a recipient of some benevolence, thank you, when I first came here, you know, not having anything set up as far as living expenses, why is it that any time the church helps you, they say, oh, don't repay it?
Don't what?
Don't repay it. You don't have to repay it. Why is that?
Well, we didn't wish to be repaid. I had a church member once that said, I need to borrow some money, and I'll pay you interest. Understand the context. I'll pay you interest. What do you think I said?
No. Well, no, the Bible says not to do that.
Wait, Diane, what did you say, Diane?
I said no.
No, and she's right. I didn't want any interest on that. That's brother to sister. Come on. But we did set a time for repayment, and the person repaid. And I expected to be repaid. In your case, absolutely not. We did, and we do not wish to be repaid. Just consider that this local church's gift to you. You are a Christian, well-versed in the Scriptures, and you've come to Denton to get a job, which you have acquired, and we did not want repayment. Richard?
I was saying, in a situation like that, if the person really wants to pay back, he can do it anonymously in a contribution if he continues to worship with that congregation.
Absolutely.
He doesn't have to announce it. He just writes a check and gives a contribution.
He doesn't have to announce it, nor do we.
Nor do we, right.
Benevolence is usually done this way. Do it in the dark. As if nobody knew but the Lord. Don't broadcast it. Don't broadcast it. Joe?
It should be done the same way as we do our contributions.
Yeah, it can be done that way. And on the fore line of the check, you don't have to write a thing.
That's right.
If it's by check. Cash, obviously, no problem. All right, let's go on. Let's look at the individual Christian. If one's family cannot or will not help, it becomes the duty of individual Christians to help. We're talking about lines of defense, family, and now we're talking about the individual. Such help would include Christians and non-Christians alike.
But.
Huh?
That's a but.
Yeah, it's coming. James 1:27, a familiar passage. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. James 2:15-16, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things that which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Jesus taught that we all must have a heart of compassion. Did Christ have a heart of compassion? Are we to emulate him? All right, statement stands on what he taught, and of course what you just affirmed. He further taught that those who do not will be rejected by him in the final judgment. And you can go to Matthew 25:31-46, which we'll do in our questions, but we won't do it here. As in all areas of service to God, our responsibilities are limited by our opportunities and abilities. But we must not be guilty of shunning our responsibility to help those in need with thoughts like, sorry, I gave at the office. I hear that a lot. One night I was in Tampa for a convention for my company. We had gone, four of us, had gone to a restaurant. We ate and we were walking back to our hotel, four or five blocks. A guy comes up. I'm on the outside near the street. He approaches me. And he tells me that he's hungry. And I said, this seemed a logical question to me, when did you last eat? Day before yesterday. Well, once you come back to our hotel, they're still serving dinner. I'll be glad to buy your meal. And he walked with us for a little while and he said, could you help me at all? And I said, there's a restaurant across the street. I'll be glad to take you over there. And he rejected that. Did I help him? Yes. And I pointed him to Temple Terrace, Florida, just right there in Tampa, to a congregation that I knew about. I said, you need to get, you have transportation? I can get transport. You need to get out there Sunday. You need to go to this church. You need to listen to the gospel of Christ preached. But I'm going to give you some money just because I'm compassionate about your need. What did he spend the money on? I don't know and I don't care. You have done the same thing probably many times. So that was just the way I decided to handle that particular situation. But it happens. It happens all the time. Now to the church. When family and individuals have done what they can, then the church has an obligation to help. But every example of this in the Bible mentions only helping needy Christians, not non-Christians, from the treasury of the local church. There are three methods of church benevolence mentioned in the New Testament. A congregation may take care of its own members. We've been over this many times. Other churches may send to one church that is unable to take care of its own members. Really? We can do that? Certainly we can. What if we had needs here that we could not cover out of the treasury? It could be a lot of different things. Could a church in our area send us funds to satisfy that need? Of course, we've got scriptural authority for that. One church may send to many churches if those churches have saints who are in need. Again, we have scriptural authority for that. A congregation may take care of its own members. Acts 4, 34 through 47. Nor was there anyone among them who lacked. For all who were possession of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as anyone had need. And Joseph, who was also named Barnabas by the apostles, which is translated son of encouragement, a Levite from the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. Clear-cut example. Elaine, I overlooked you a while ago. I thought you had your hand up. It just hit my brain.
It was back there a ways. And it was, all I was going to say is another way that the person is received from the church or from an individual is just pay it forward.
Paying what?
Pay it forward.
Oh,
when
sure.
When they have the opportunity and the funds.
Absolutely. Yeah. There have been examples here of the same thing. All right, continuing, other churches may send to one church that is unable to take care of its own members. Romans 15, 25 and 26. But now I'm going to Jerusalem, Paul is saying, serving the saints for Macedonia and Achaia, having been pleased to make a contribution for the poor saints, for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. The Jerusalem church also received a contribution from the churches of Galatia and Corinth. In 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed to the churches of Galatia, so do you also. One church may send to many churches if those churches have saints who are in need. The church in Antioch sent to the churches in Judea. Note Acts 11, 28 through 30. And Agabus stood up and began to indicate by the Spirit that there would certainly be a great famine all over the world, and this took place in the reign of Claudius. You ever wonder why that's in there? Marks a historical time frame. And in the proportion that any of the disciples had means, each of them determined to send a contribution for the relief of the brethren living in Judea. And this they did, sending it in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders. One church sending to many churches. John.
I'm sorry, I want to go back to your point a minute ago about the guy you helped with the money.
Yeah.
Even this morning I had somebody asking if you have a couple dollars. I think part of our responsibility as Christians is to make sure that. And I said, well, what do you need some food? Because I have a food stamp thing and I can buy him all the groceries he wanted. And he said, no, I want a beer. Well, I told him, of course, I can't.
Yeah, there you go.
But one of the things that will get you some dirty looks, but it's always made me feel comfortable about the way I do things, is I always keep some kind of snacks in the truck. Just junk food, crackers or potato chips or a jar of peanut butter jelly. And you see those people, because you always say to yourself, well, how can I help all these people? All these people need help. Well, you see the people that say, we'll work for food. I have often gone by them and handed them, even tried to hand them a bag full of junk food, you know, whatever, something to keep them. Oh, no, I don't want that junk, or I've seen them throw it right on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, I've done what God asked me to do. Mm-hmm. To try and help somebody. They said they needed food, I gave them food.
Yeah.
If I'd had work, and I've done it before, I said, oh, I got some work for you, I gave you $12 an hour, come on, hold up my back and my knees and sound like Granny Clampett, you know. So I think our responsibility is to help everybody who can, but do it the same way the elders have the responsibility to help.
Absolutely. You got to be careful about it. A lot of the people that panhandle in the medians of our streets have finer tennis shoes than I have. Backpacks look like they just came out of Walmart. Some of them even have a dog. Where do they get all the food for all this stuff? Well, it's a business. If you've ever witnessed it, the exchanging of the guard with these people, then you would understand. I will not help them. I will say to them, go get a job. Pick up your Denton paper. There are lots of jobs, unskilled jobs, available in this very city. Okay. One church may send to many churches if those churches have saints who are in need. The relief was not sent to Jerusalem as the sponsoring church for the whole arrangement, but it was sent to each church in Judea for distribution. If you remember, we put up a map of the churches in Judea. Now, maybe not all of them had needy brethren, but I think there were about 23 of them that we showed in a map here. So there were plenty of them. Some of the towns in Judea, which likely had churches, would include Jerusalem, Joppa, Lydda, Emmaus, and Bethany. The churches in Judea are mentioned in 1 Thessalonians 2:14. For you, brethren, became imitators of the churches of God, churches of God in Christ Jesus that are in Judea, for you also endured the same sufferings at the hands of your own countrymen, even as they did from the Jews. And then we come to this question. What about 2 Corinthians 9:12 and 13? We need to take a special look at this passage in its context. Here's the statement. For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all. Someone says, why are we looking at this? Some believe this verse 13, to benevolent help, referring to benevolent help from the church in Corinth to both saint and non-saint. Look at the passage. Who's writing the letter? Who is he writing to? The Corinthians. Second Corinthians, chronologically, is after 1 Corinthians. Not all the Bible is like that, but this one is. But there's a space of a couple of years between them. So the collection in 1 Corinthians 16 has already been made. Paul is following up his first letter by making this statement. Now, I don't know how you get a sponsoring church arrangement out of verse 13. But because I guess it does not specify non-saint, then they're included in that line of thinking. Two important questions need to be asked to help us understand the meaning of these passages. Why was the money collected? Anybody want to answer that?
To help the poor saints in
Jerusalem. There you go. Well, in Judea, in this instance.
Because of the famine.
How was the money used?
Supply their needs.
Satisfy their needs. Why was the money collected? Every verse in the New Testament that deals with a collection of these funds specifies that saints, Christians, would be those who receive help. A few are 1 Corinthians 16:1, now concerning the collection for the saints. Romans 15:25, 26, now I'm going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. For it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints. The money collected was for needy saints. Did Paul represent it as that and then have it distributed to everyone and anyone who asked? There is nothing in the text that would lead me down that path. Not at all, John.
I'm sorry, I'll keep bugging you. I'll just back up here on the first list. The church in Antioch sent the church in the Judea. The relief was not sent to Jerusalem as a sponsoring church for the whole arrangement, but the elders of the church in Judea for distribution.
That's right.
They think that was necessary to tell us it wasn't sent to the sponsoring church?
Well, because there's nothing in there that indicates a sponsoring church arrangement. What does a sponsoring church do? They set up among the elders of a larger congregation and get funds from smaller congregations so that they can do a work usually greater than they're able to do alone. There's nothing in the text that indicates this. You have churches of Christ sending relief to an area, Judea, or in the case in Romans, a specific congregation.
Yeah, because otherwise it would set up a hierarchy.
Exactly right.
Exactly what happens,
yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. Question number two, how was the money used? The question is clearly answered by reading 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, chapters 8 and 9. We don't have time. We're not going to take the time to read those. You can do that on your own. But here are four selections from those two chapters. 2 Corinthians 8:4. Imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of ministering to the saints. 2 Corinthians 8:14. But by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also may supply your lack, that there may be equality, everyone's needs are satisfied. 2 Corinthians 9:1. Now concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. 2 Corinthians 9:12. For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. Here's some concluding thoughts, and before we look at those, I would just like to say, if you can find a passage, any passage in the New Testament, where anyone was ever helped from the church treasury that was not a Christian, I'm waiting to see that. All you have to do, search your Bible. If you have a computer, you've got a lot of search. In fact, you can just search the internet. You don't even have to have Bible software. You can get it all off the internet if you like. John.
What do you think about organizations like, I mean, I know that we don't support them, but, you know, the Church of Christ itself actually has disaster relief efforts in some congregations, things like that. What do you think about stuff like that? I know it's not biblical, but...
Well, if it's not biblical, then do we need to go further?
Well, I know, but can we support them as individuals?
Oh, you certainly can as individuals, but it's not a work of the church. If we said Eastside Church of Christ Benevolent Fund, if we did that, and we all put money in it, you have individual Christians contributing to something within the local church that's not in the scriptures. So if you want to contribute to somebody or some organization, we have a food bank here in Denton. Nothing wrong with it. Write a check.
But as a church, we don't support that.
Oh, absolutely not. Have to be a saint.
Right.
Has to be contextually scriptural. Richard?
One of the things that's often looked in this whole discussion is modern countries have civil and government agencies that do this kind of thing all the time. We don't always have to rely on churches to do that.
Yeah.
We pay taxes. We contribute to welfare agencies, and those agencies are more than willing to help people out.
Right.
But a lot of them discriminate, and that's why people don't want to go there, is because they may have to work.
There's a major congregation, denomination in this city, and they have a benevolent arrangement where they will feed people by giving them financial assistance. If you go over there and you apply, you will be faced with an application. They want to know everything about you. Any problem with that? Well, there's no problem with the application. There's a problem with what they're doing as a work of that denomination. That's the problem. Richard laid it out very well. There are ways and means. If someone in this congregation needs help, we don't have to go to any fund. Not at all. If they're a Christian and we understand the need and we can address it from the treasury, we will. And you have a part in that through your contributions. But if it's beyond the help of the treasury, you know, then individuals have to get together. Can we solicit, in that case, other churches to help an individual or several in our congregation because we can't do it? Of course we can. We have scripture for that. Here's some concluding thoughts. The Bible clearly teaches that needy people deserve to be helped and that faithful Christians will help them. But we must be careful to do God's work in God's way. And we must make certain that we are fulfilling our duties both individually and collectively according to God's pattern. I trust you have no problem with that slide. That's basically what we've been studying for several weeks. Our time is up this morning. I appreciate your cooperation, your listening, and especially your questions. And so we're going to deal with the questions on this lesson next week. Thanks very much.